Larkin, Judge Flory, the Honorable Francis J. Conley presiding.
Thank you and good morning. Our first case this morning is 823-0406, the State of Minnesota versus Raymond Allen Torgerson. As all parties are aware, the appellant will have 15 minutes for their arguments in chief, respondent will have 15 minutes, and finally, appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. This is being simultaneously recorded broadcast. But please keep in mind that an audio recording of this argument will be available tomorrow, but everyone is not allowed to make their own private recordings today. So with that, counsel for the appellant, if you can begin by just telling us who you are in a loud, clear voice, please.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Sharon Jackson. I'm the Assistant State Public Defender representing Raymond Torgerson in this challenge to his felony conviction for introducing a dangerous weapon into a jail. He asked that his conviction be reversed outright because the evidence is insufficient to sustain it, or in the alternative that this court grant him a new trial because the jury was not instructed and it didn't find that the state proved beyond a reasonable doubt that he intentionally introduced a dangerous weapon into the jail. There are a number of reasons that the evidence is insufficient, and I'd like to, for starters, address the element that the small ceramic knife that he had on his person was a dangerous weapon. The relevant statutory definition required the evidence to show that the way that Mr. Torgerson intended to use the knife at the jail was calculated or likely to cause great bodily harm or death. And the evidence here doesn't support that. There's a reasonable inference from the fact that he put the knife in his shoe long before he ever knew that he was going to be arrested for a disorderly conduct, that he was placed in handcuffs and put in the squad and taken to the jail, knowing based on his past experience that he would in fact be required to take his shoes and socks off when he arrived there. And when that in fact did happen and the knife fell out of his socks, Mr. Torgerson did not even look at the knife, let alone make any motion towards grabbing it or trying to secure it. And in fact, he just continued to look at the officers and said, had you asked me, I would have told you it was there. From that evidence, it can be inferred that he wasn't intending to use it at all. And if he was intending to use it, it certainly wasn't to murder anyone or to cause any grave injury to them. I can't hear you, Judge Larkin.
There you go. I had to unmute. Sorry. Thank you. It seems to me the question the jury had to answer is, what was his intent in having a knife in his shoe? So what's your, and it also seems that the one reasonable inference from that fact, person hiding a knife in their shoe, would be that, well, the person intends to use it for some sort of defense or aggression. So that's one reasonable inference, which would support a finding that it's a dangerous weapon based on the manner in which it was intended to be used. It seems to me that to overcome that reasonable inference, you need to proffer another reasonable inference that's supported by the facts. So what's your alternative hypothesis of innocence as to why someone would have, albeit a small knife, a knife concealed in their shoe?
Well, Judge Larkin, context matters. So that the scenario that you set out would be you could reasonably infer that perhaps at the time that he went to the county fair, that was his intent, that he was going to use it in some nefarious way. But the question here is, we have to look at the timing of the offense. And the offense is introducing a weapon, dangerous weapon, into a jail. So his intent to make it a dangerous weapon had to be at the time that it was introduced into the jail. That knife he put it on his person long before that. So the question is, at the time the knife went into the jail, was it a dangerous weapon? At that time, was his intent to, in the matter in which he intended to use it, if he intended to use it at all, was to cause great bodily harm to the officers or to kill them? And our reasonable inference, quite honestly, is he was very upset that day. He was, arrested on a misdemeanor, which is almost unheard of, for a disorderly conduct that he was acquitted of. So he felt that he was being wronged. He was under the influence. He was very upset. And at most, you know, he was, you know, provoking or frustrating, punking the officers. I really encourage you to watch the video. When the knife falls out, you hear a clink. He doesn't look down. He continues to look at the officers. And it's almost a shoulder shrug. Well, if you would have asked, I would have told you it was there. And we know he did that exact thing in a prior occasion because one of the officers testified to that. The officer testified, hey, you know, I arrested him a few months back and he told me he had a knife. I asked him if he had a knife. He said it was in his sock and he grabbed it for me and handed it to me. So there's a reasonable inference here that he never intended to use this knife whatsoever, let alone to somehow seriously harm the officers.
So the short answer is, when considering how the knife was intended to be used, you say, well, you have to consider how it was intended to be used at the jail, conceding that the evidence would support an inference that, well, as it was intended to be used at the fair, could have been to cause harm. And do you dispute that the knife, despite its size, is something that could produce great bodily harm?
You know, I do dispute that. And I will tell you that's because there's no evidence about the knife in the record. The state didn't present the knife and the state didn't present a picture of the knife. And we know that he walked on the knife throughout the day. So it presumably was extremely dull. There is a picture of the knife in the pretrial documents that the jury never saw. And it's laid out in a picture aside a pen. And it looks like it's about an inch longer than a pen. It's described as a ceramic knife, you know, it's not a serrated knife. So I think it's questionable whether it was even capable of that.
What was the evidence about the knife that was presented to the jury?
The officer described it. The officer described it as a small, florally designed ceramic knife, kitchen knife. And everybody agreed it wasn't designed as a dangerous weapon. It certainly wasn't used as a dangerous weapon because it was in the bottom of his shoe. The only question for the jury was, yeah, was it, you know, in the manner in which he intended to use it, was it likely or calculated to cause death or great bodily harm? And again,
what if he stabbed somebody in the eye? I mean, I can imagine, facts where something that looks pretty innocuous could cause great bodily harm.
Yeah, that certainly is possible. I'm not saying categorically there's no way it possibly could have. I'm saying that was a reasonable inference from the evidence is certainly not that that was his intent. And again, I'd encourage you to watch the video. I think it's Exhibit 4, where it shows the interaction between him and the four officers that were with him that day. They certainly don't appear to be in any, seem concerned that they're going to be harmed in any way.
Ms. Jacks, does your argument depend upon whether or not the officers failed to ask him, do you have any weapons on you?
That fact does not come into play at all with respect to the dangerous weapon argument, whether or not there's sufficient evidence on dangerous weapon. With respect to whether he intentionally introduced it, that is one fact that supports a reasonable inference that he didn't intend to, we would say. But no, the argument doesn't turn on that. Okay. The argument with respect to the intentional introduction of the knife, if you were to find it was a dangerous weapon, is that he put it on his person before he ever knew he was going to the jail. And then he was forcibly brought into the jail by the officers in handcuffs. They testified to that. They said, yes, the knife was on his person before you know, before we encountered him. Yes, we forcibly introduced him into the jail, but then they denied that they were the ones that introduced the knife.
The defendant did the defendant testify?
Defendant did not testify.
Okay. So I assume your defense is not like that he forgot he had a knife in his shoe.
No, we acknowledge he knew he had a knife in his shoe.
Okay. So yeah. How is this different from, you know, I packed my bags. Oops. You know, I was hunting last weekend. There's a pistol in my bag. I bring it through metal detectors at the airport and, you know, I get arrested for having a handgun in my, you know, bag going through metal detectors. I mean.
It's different because you were handcuffed and forced to go through the metal conductor.
No, but I mean, so I can't I'm not allowed to bring a gun on a plane. I'm not allowed to bring a weapon into a prison. Explain to me, as Jax, why is this different? I don't get it.
It's different because there is a, in the context of jails and prisons, there is an intentional mens rea. We say it in our brief, State versus Strong. I believe in the airport context, it's a knowing introduction.
And that's not in the statute, though, right?
It's not in the statute. It was read into the statute by the Minnesota Supreme Court in State versus Strong. But even under a knowing...
That was not a prison.
Is that a different statute that they considered in Strong, Ms. Jax?
It was. It was an almost identical...
The language in this statute is caused in any manner. And you've been using the word intentionally. I'm not sure caused in any manner and intentionally mean the same thing. It may mean a knowing introduction, but an intentional introduction, I'm not sure that would be an element of the offense, would it?
Well, the prison statute also says causes in any manner, and the Minnesota Supreme Court affirmed the district court's conclusion that required a willful and intentional introduction or causing of the introduction of the weapon. You know, so we would say that it was clearly, you know, the jail statute was promulgated before that decision, and there has been no decision since that has backed off that intentionality. But getting back to your question, Judge Conley, even if it was knowing, if the mens rea is knowing, as the Court of Appeals in Oregon said in Valdez Ortiz, there's still insufficient evidence to show that an individual did that if they placed the contraband on their person before ever knowing they were going to go to jail, and then they were taken by force into the jail by officers. Under those circumstances, they didn't knowingly introduce anything. They didn't commit a volitional act.
When a person's arrested, you know, I don't know if they know they're going to jail or not. Isn't that a problem with your case?
They put him in cuffs and stuck him in the squad. So, I mean, he knew he was going. And he did nothing. So, for instance, had in the squad he taken it out of his sock and hidden it somewhere else, then he would have knowingly done something to ensure that it was introduced into the jail.
Yeah, but then you'd be arguing he wasn't going to prison then because he took it out of his shoe.
He did it at the squad. I mean, if my scenario is if he did it in the squad car.
if he knows he's going to jail, he knows he has a knife in his shoe, and he does not say, "Hey, I've got a knife in my shoe." Isn't he knowingly introducing it into the facility? Because at that point, he knows he's going to jail. He knows it's in his shoe. He knows he's bringing a knife in. Isn't the fact that he fails to disclose its existence proof that he knowingly introduced it to the jail?
No. And my response is based on the way you phrase the question, his failure to tell. The mens rea attaches to the forbidden act, and the forbidden act is causing the introduction. It's not failing to stop the introduction. So this isn't like, failure to pay child support. And then the forbidden act is failure to do something, and you have to knowingly fail to do it. This is a you know, a crime of action. He has to cause it in some manner. And he, at most, failed to stop it from going in. And therefore...
Why isn't this a strict liability offense, given the significant public safety concerns, or I guess it's not public safety, but given the very significant concerns about the potential for violence in a jail against the police or against other inmates? It seems to me that this case, this fact, is very different than a kid who brings a knife to school. That's a very serious situation and concerning, but it seems to me that the jail facility context even ratchets that concern up a few notches.
Yeah. Well, two responses to that, Judge Larkin. One is that in Strong, with respect to a, and I see my time is running here, Judge Conley, may I answer the question?
Please go ahead, Ms. Jax, please do.
Thank you. In State versus Strong, the Minnesota Supreme Court held that almost the under the exact same language that prohibits bringing firearms and explosives into a prison is not a strict liability offense. It requires willful and intentional causing the introduction of one of those items into a prison. And so similarly, if the legislature did not find that that was a public welfare exception, there's no evidence that it would find that a jail was different than a prison in that respect. But secondly, remember that the statute also criminalizes having a dangerous weapon in one's possession in the jail, which they could have charged and prosecuted here, but the state chose not to. So there are alternative ways that someone under the statute can be found guilty of having that dangerous weapon. We would still be arguing that this is not a dangerous weapon for the same reasons. But in this case, the state expressly prosecuted it as causing it to be introduced, and the evidence simply doesn't support that. So we'd ask that you reverse his conviction for insufficient evidence.
Thank you very much, Ms. Jax. We'll now hear from counsel for the respondent, please.
Good morning, Your Honors. Sebastian Mesa, Assistant Aiken County Attorney, respondent for the state. Your Honors, I'm asking you to certify and uphold this conviction. I want to address the appellant's points in the order in which she delivered them, that being first to speak about the dangerous weapon element. It is, as the evidence was presented at trial, a small ceramic knife. The jury did not get to see the knife except with the video that was presented. And as counsel points out, you are welcome to look at the pretrial evidence that shows the knife more clearly than the jury got to see it. But the evidence revealed the knife, small ceramic steak knife. Can a small ceramic steak knife be used as a dangerous weapon? Of course. Not only was that proven beyond a reasonable doubt, it's simply common sense. As I believe it was Your Honor, Judge Connolly, who asked, perhaps it was Judge Larkin who said, can't a knife be used to stab someone in the eye, regardless of how small it is? Of course.
Well, did the officer testify that this knife has a point? Because, you know, if it's a butter knife, well, I guess you could stab him in the eye, but, you know, it's going to be a lot worse if there's a point, because then you could damage the eye permanently. So did the officer say this steak knife has a point?
Your Honor, it wasn't described in that fashion. It was described as a small ceramic.
Can you see the point on the video? If I look at this video, can I see, that knife has a point?
I think it's fairly clear that the knife is a standard steak knife. It's a smaller steak knife, but it's not a butter knife. It's not a table knife. It's not a bread knife. It's a steak knife. It's meant for cutting meat. Meat, human flesh, not so very different. Here you have a knife that could cause great bodily injury if it's put to someone's face, put to their neck, put to their eye, their ear. Really, any vital organ of the body. We've had case law that upholds dangerous weapon findings and, you know, prison shivs that are created out of toothbrushes and wrapping paper. This, though specifically not designed for use as a weapon, can certainly be utilized as a weapon. And as has been discussed, I think there's a great deal of evidence in this case that Mr. Torgerson's intention, the appellant's intention, was not to use this knife in the manner in which it was designed. He had it hidden in his boot or shoe. Miss Jacks could not provide you with a reasonable alternative explanation because there is none. A person hides a knife in their shoe when they intend it for criminal mischief or to use it aggressively, whether in self-defense or offense. But it's clear that he intends to use it as a weapon simply by virtue of where it's found on his person, hidden inside his boot. And that was what the jury accepted. Now, would we have a different set of facts if Mr. Torgerson had come in with a backpack with a cutlery set and somehow that had been introduced into the jail? Perhaps, but that's not the case here. What is the case is that this individual hid this knife in his shoe and very obviously did not intend to use it to cut steaks, Your Honors. So, to address the idea that, well, there's no context because he put the knife in his shoe before he was arrested, that's going to be true of anyone who's arrested and brought into a jail and is found to have a dangerous weapon or contraband on their person. Obviously, they had it in there before they were arrested. Ms. Jack's proposition is that, well, and this goes to intentionality, but Ms. Jack's proposition is that because Mr. Torgerson didn't want to be arrested, he can't have formed intent. Nobody wants to be arrested. Under Ms. Jack's reading, this statute is simply inapplicable to everyone because no one wants to be arrested. Therefore, there's no intent. Well, that's just a ludicrous proposition, Your Honors. She Jackson, also...
How do you respond, Mr. Mesa, to Ms. Jackson's argument in Re Welfare CRM, where the court did read a knowing intent element into possessing a dangerous weapon on school property? I mean, you know, we don't want guns in schools for all the reasons we've watched in the media the last 10 years. Right. And obviously, we don't want weapons in prison for obvious reasons. But, you know, how do we get around that case
Well, and Your Honor, I don't think we have to. Judge Larkin posed the question, couldn't this be a strict liability offense? I think that's a reasonable position to take. But I don't disagree with the notion that there should be understood to be a mens rea element on any offense, and I say this as a former public defender, on any offense that carries with it a potential prison term. I do think it's appropriate to hold the state to the burden of proving knowing. I don't think it's appropriate to hold the state to the burden of proving in, you know, willful or with intent to. There's simply nothing in the statute that would suggest a legislative intent to craft that mens rea requirement. Ms. Jacks reads quite a bit into Strong. Strong does not stand for the proposition that the introduction of contraband must be a specific intent crime, only that there be an element of scienter, in this case, general intent, knowingly. This is a possession offense. Like any possession offense, the mens rea element should be knowing. And, you know, more specifically, Strong really stands for the proposition that a complaint mentioning scienter should not be amended to remove the scienter from the complaint. That's the specific holding in Strong. Ms. Jacks has expanded that to this kind of broad interpretation that these statutes require a specific intent showing or element. And I'm sorry, Judge Larkin, did you have a question?
If you agree that the necessary mens rea is knowledge, what's your argument as to why he had knowledge? I mean, opposing counsel says he didn't know he was going to jail. He didn't want to go to jail. He wasn't trying to bring this knife in. Essentially, it was beyond his control. What do you say to that?
I stress again what I said earlier that, you know, nobody wants to go to jail. That doesn't erase intent of the introduction of contraband. As Ms. Jacks herself points out, this is not Appellant's first rodeo. In fact, as came to light during the trial, one of the arresting officers had specifically arrested him before, had discovered a knife in his shoe, had been given that knife. And in this case, standing just a foot away from the appellant, asked his fellow officer and colleague, "Did you check his shoe? He's been known to hide knives in his shoe." At that point, the sergeant does just that. The sergeant deputy checks the appellant's shoe, feels around inside of it, but can't detect the knife. Ms. Jacks then argued to you, well, once he was placed in the squad, if he had taken that knife from his boot and hid it elsewhere, that would show intent. I would say to you, Your Honors, why in the world would he do that when he's already been searched and the knife hasn't been found? He's got the perfect hiding spot. His hiding spot was already checked and it wasn't found. Why in the world would he need to move it?
Well, if he knows everything that, you know, you say he does, he knows that they're going to, I mean, I don't know if they strip search you or whatever you do, but there will be a more thorough search when, you know, before they admit him behind bars. So I would think if he knew, well, I would assume the average person knows you can't bring weapons into prisons. I don't know. I mean, that's sort of common sense. So if he was in the police car, I would think that's when he would want to ditch it because he would know he was going to prison and, you know, then you're in real trouble because, you know, then you're smuggling contraband into prison, blah, blah, blah. So that would make sense to me. Why wasn't the knife introduced at trial?
I can't speak to that, Your Honor. I did not handle the trial myself. That was my predecessor, Mr. Nice.
Well, is there enough evidence in the record to indicate that this, you know, is a steak knife that you could get someone with? I mean, where do we look for that? Is it a combination of the video and the officer's description?
I would say so, Your Honor. I think there's a sufficiency in the record that there's a steak knife, a ceramic steak knife that could be used to cause bodily harm, great bodily harm or death. Why wouldn't he move it if he wanted to get rid of it? Precisely. He didn't want to get rid of it, which goes to his intent to take it into the jail. Does he know it's in his shoe? Of course he knows it's in his shoe. There's the knowing element. How could he not know it's in his shoe?
You know, Mr. Mesa, I'm a little confused about your using the words intent and knowing in the same manner, because they seem to be different concepts under the statute. And we seem to be mixing those things. Intent seems to be talking about a specific intent crime, or knowing is a general intent crime. So I'm a little confused by your argument by interchanging those two words. I thought I understood you to say it had to be knowingly introduced, but not intentionally. And
that's correct, Your Honor. And I apologize. That is right of you to point out. I'm using the term incorrectly. The mens rea is knowingly. That's consistent with all the case law. It's consistent with INRI CRM. It's consistent with this idea that if we find the legislature is silent on mens rea and the mens rea element, We do not ascribe necessarily a strict liability because it's an offense that carries with it potential prison term. It's a felony offense, and so we're loath to do that. But we don't jump from no mens rea to intentional, willful, with intent to. Instead, we apply, as we do in possession crimes, knowingly. I think there's ample evidence in the record here, and certainly viewed in the light most favorable to the state, Your Honor, as the jury found, that Mr. Torgerson, the appellant, knew he had a knife. And one other thing I want to address is this idea that because Mr. Nice, in his closing argument, failed to emphasize the possession portion of the statute, does not mean that the state did not prosecute Mr. Torgerson on that theory of criminal liability. That was the jury instruction read. That was the jig that he introduced, caused to introduce the dangerous weapon into the jail, or was found in possession of it. He certainly was found in possession of it, and he certainly did cause it to be introduced, because at any time, Mr. Torgerson, who was not a stranger to jails and to the justice system, and who in fact knew that officers were searching his shoe to try to specifically find a knife, could have said, "I have a knife." His statement at the jail, "If you would have asked me, I would have told you," doesn't just satisfy the knowing element of the knife. It is also, Your Honors, an exposition of consciousness of guilt. If you would have asked me, I would have told you, but he didn't.
Does the record indicate, like, as you go into prison, that there's a sign that says, hey, you know, no cell phones, no weapons, no drugs, you know, anything like that? Does the record indicate that?
Your Honor, I see I have about 5 seconds left.
Please answer the question. Thank you.
I don't believe there was any discussion on the record of signage. There was discussion of whether knives are allowed in the jail. The answer was a resounding no. There was no cross to suggest otherwise. As well, I would point out Mr. Torgerson has been to the jail before. He knows the rules.
The record indicate he's been to the prison before or the jail before?
Well, the record indicates that he was arrested before and that he had a knife on his
person. I can assure you in Hennepin County, that doesn't often result in, you know, anything. So thank you, Mr. Mesa. Ms. Jacks, you'll have the last word, please. You're muted, Ms. Jacks.
Initially, I'd just like to point out that the instructions to the jury on page 278 and 279, and there is absolutely no instruction about possession. The instruction to the jury is, first, you need to find that the defendant brought, sent, or in any manner caused to introduce into Aiken County Jail a dangerous weapon. This was not charged as a possession offense. It was charged as an introduction offense. Not surprisingly, I'd like to address the argument that my argument is ludicrous. In response, I'd like to say that the state's argument is completely divorced from the statutory definition of dangerous weapon. The dangerous weapon definition, there are three separate ways an item can be a dangerous weapon. One is if it's designed as a dangerous weapon, and the state is correct that if a weapon is designed as an item is designed as a dangerous weapon, anytime you have it on your person, you're possessing a dangerous weapon. But the other two require some context. It's either the manner in which you use the item or the manner in which you intend to use the item. And in those two circumstances, we're talking about the way it was used when committing the offense, the way it was intended to be used when you're committing the offense. The offense here is introduction of a dangerous weapon into a facility. And therefore, you have to look at the time that he introduced it. What was his intent? Of course, nobody wants to go to jail. And some people who go to jail with a knife in their stock, when it falls out, might die for it and attempt to strike one of the officers. That's not what happened here. Again, I would encourage you to watch the video. Mr. Torgerson does not even look to the ground when the knife falls off. He looks directly at one of the four officers and says, if you would have asked me, I would have told you it was there. Ha, ha, ha. So when you're looking to see, is there a reasonable inference of what his intent was? There is a reasonable inference here that his intent was not to kill anyone. It was not to cause any grave harm to any of these deputies. We're not contesting that perhaps the item, the small ceramic knife, could have somehow harmed something if he had intended to do that. But that's not the question. Was it capable of causing great bodily harm or death? The question is that what he intended? And there's a reasonable inference that he did. Finally, I'd just like to state that we clearly, do you have a question, Judge Conley?
You know, following up on your argument, Ms. Jack, so, you know, the manner used or intended to be used, I guess I'm having a hard time understanding, you know, what other manner would he be intending to use this knife, introducing it to prison? I mean, you know, you're not allowed to, you know, I don't like, you know, he's clearly not thinking, well, based on my experience, you know, Friday is steak night. So, you know, I want to be able to cut my meat. So what other manner would he have intended to use this knife that was in his boot?
As we argued, Judge Conley, we don't believe he intended to use it at all. Look at the evidence. The evidence doesn't indicate in any way that he ever intended to use that knife. If anything, he just didn't tell them because he was angry at them and he was, you know, taunting them in some way. Look at the way he responds when it falls out. You know, was that right to do that? No. Was it a civil way to respond? No. But was it criminal conduct? No, it's not criminal conduct because there's a reasonable inference that he never intended to use the knife. There just simply isn't any evidence that he did. In fact, there's other evidence from prior occasions that indicate that he didn't use it when he had a knife, he didn't use it, and he voluntarily offered it up. So clearly the evidence supports the theory that he wasn't intending to use it. As far as State versus Strong, we read that case very differently. There's a Supreme Court holding there that the district court did not err by reading an intentional and willful mens rea into the offense. Yes, we agree with the state that that's unusual, but that's the holding to the extent in CRM that they indicated in dicta that it was knowing. That's not supported by the holding in Strong. So for the reasons set out today and all the reasons in our brief, we'd ask that you reverse his conviction outright or remand for a new trial. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Jacks. Thank you very much, Mr. Mesa. And Ms. Jacks, I can assure you, speaking on behalf of the panel, no one ever finds your arguments ludicrous. I find them always very challenging, but never ludicrous. So thank you so much.